There are countless personal finance resources that offer a wide variety of advice on everything from investing, saving, to retirement and taxes. But University of Chicago professor Harold Pollack believes you can fit all the investment advice you'll ever need on a single index card. Harold's one of the authors behind The Index Card, Why Personal Finance Doesn't Have to Be Complicated. He joins us now from Chicago, Illinois. Hello there.
Thanks so much for having me.
This book came about back when you were challenged to share your best financial advice on a single index card. Why that challenge? How did that come to be?
Well, you know, I was obsessed with personal finance because I had a family tragedy that sort of made me very focused on money. And as part of that, I would talk to people who, you know, were experts on personal finance, who'd written books about it, things like that. And one day I was talking to Helene Olin, who wrote a book called Pound Foolish. I was talking to her about it. And just I flippantly said, you know, isn't the fundamental problem facing the personal finance industry that the best advice for most people is available for free at the library, and it would fit on an index card? And we kind of chuckled and we moved on. And then I started getting all these emails saying, well, where's the index card?
I need the index card. Give me the index card.
Yeah, of course, I was speaking metaphorically, but I had, you know, I had made a statement and I had to back it up. So I just reached into the drawer, you know, in our kitchen, pulled out a 4x6 index card, scribbled down 9 rules, took a picture with my iPhone and posted it on the web, and it got 400,000 hits.
Oh, my God.
And it was, it probably took me, you know, 2 minutes to write the thing. And it was, it actually won one Money Magazine, you know, one of their best new ideas of the year. And of course, I'm at the University of Chicago with all these real financial experts. And they looked at my card and they just said, you're kidding.
Right. We've been working for a decade on research that will get us tenure and research dollars. And you write something on an index card and put it on Instagram. Really?
That's exactly right. That was exactly the reaction that I got. But there was something about that that people found very helpful, because it takes all these really intimidating tasks about saving for your retirement and says, you don't have to understand all that stuff. You just have to kind of follow these rules, which you can kind of look at on your refrigerator. And people found that helpful.
We're going to go through many of the 9, though probably not all. Let me ask you this. It's a terrible question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you have a favorite? I know these are your 9 children. Do you have a favorite? Just tell me. I won't tell anyone.
Well, I think that probably, I guess I would say don't buy or sell any individual stock. Because the great thing about that is that it's anyone can follow that. And
yeah.
All the data is, we're all so terrible at playing the market. And it's just, that's the simplest. I would say that's my favorite. Probably if I give a second favorite, you know, sort of like your kids, you know,
yeah.
You say, well, this is my favorite,
mm-hmm.
This is also my favorite. I would say save your money. I said save 20% of your money, which for a lot of people is really hard. But, you know, rocket science is a lot more fun when you have rockets, and investing is just
right.
A lot more fun when you've got some savings there.
So that was 3 and 4. I tell you, my favorite is 5, pay your credit card balance off in full every month. And I love that because while it's hard to do, the notion and the rationale behind the notion are so incredibly simple. And the guaranteed return is so profound. In fact, if I had to take it from an index card to a, a postage stamp, I think I'd pick your 5.
That's a pretty good one. You got me there.
Yeah.
No, it's a risk-free, tax-free return for most people of like 16 or 20%. There's nothing that you're going to invest in if you're not named Warren Buffett that's going to get you anything close to that.
Now, your 1 is maximize your retirement savings. We call it – we have a different phrase up here for retirement savings than the 401k. We call it an RSP. Why was that 1? Should I interpret anything into that? Is that the top priority, or is there an order to these?
Well, I must say that to a great extent, the order was what came into my head in those 2 minutes.
Right.
The good thing – that one came to my head very early because it's a mechanical thing that anyone who has a sort of salary job is confronted with. And it's a great way of just making it automatic and taking this money out of your hot little fingers where you're tempted to spend it and also where you get the employer match. So that jumped into my head right away for that reason.
One of the rules that is harder to wrap your mind around is number 8, make financial advisors commit to the fiduciary standard. What is another way of saying that? And how does the average person, Canadian American, how does the average person follow through on that rule?
Oh, you have a very polite but explicit and blunt conversation, which is you say to your financial advisor, do you commit to dealing with me as a fiduciary in all of the investments that I have with you? And the idea is the fiduciary is under a legal obligation to maximize your financial well-being. It means that it typically means you're the only person who's paying them for the advice that they're giving you. You know, if you don't have that fiduciary standard, you're often speaking with a salesman. And, you know, there's a lot of things that salesmen, a lot of really great things that a salesman can do for you, but you don't walk onto the Ford lot and say, do you think that I need a new car or do I, or should I drive?
Can I just drive my old beater? I know you're having a sale, but I should probably just stay with what I've got, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's not the person you want to ask. And, you know, financial advisors, we often think that they are giving us unbiased advice when they're not. And I must say that when I wrote this down, it's amazing how many of my friends and relatives said, I have a great financial advisor and he's free or something like that. And of course, my heart always sinks.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I don't know if you work for free, but I typically don't.
Yeah.
And you know, if it's free, you're the product. And almost always when I started to talk to people about their really cheap or their free financial advisor who is not a fiduciary, they would be in investments with high fees or there would be something going on that just was not in their best interest. And so that's just a very, you just want to have a very straight up conversation. And at this point, all the advisors, they've had this conversation a million times before. You know, if they're uncomfortable about it, that's a red flag. You just talk straight up about it.
Number 9 is unlike any other on your list, and it is promote social insurance programs to help people when things go wrong. It sounds, well, in America, especially in these times, it sounds like a very political point versus a, you know, sort of thing you can check off your checklist. Why did that make the 9?
It's interesting. A lot of people complained about that and said, you know, you gave me all this, you know, sound advice and then you got all political.
Then you had to get all communist on me.
That's right. Well, you know, I think it would be dishonest for me not to have number 9 on. The reason that I wrote the book or, you know, they started the book with Helene was, you know, when I was a newly tenured professor at the University of Chicago, my mother-in-law died suddenly and her son, my brother-in-law, who is intellectually disabled, moved into our home. And he was 340 pounds and he needed to be hospitalized, you know, many times. And we would have absolutely been bankrupted if it wasn't for Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. And I think particularly for an upper middle class professional like myself, it's very easy to give other people advice about how you should live like I do with the resources that I have. And if you're struggling, it's because you suck, you know,
right.
You know, and that, and the truth is that I would just, you know, I relied on the American taxpayer to rescue me in my hour of need. And, you know, we can protect each other against these catastrophic risks that would just crush any one of us if we had to face it on our own. And I felt it was really important to honor that. You know, if you get cancer, it doesn't matter how good of a job you've done saving, you know, you're going to need help to pay for that. And that's all part of the mix too.
It's interesting as a Canadian and working on a Canadian show, we so take for granted the social safety net that we have. We still complain about it and the wait times and the rah, 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 and people not pulling their fair share or whatever. But we do have a layer of support that isn't common around the world. And I know from when I lived in the U.S., it's not, unfortunately not common for you in the country that you live in.
No, Canada certainly has work to do itself. I've done some health services work up in Toronto, and there's certainly gaps in the Canadian safety net,
yeah.
But there is a sense of fundamental security that you've been able to provide that we could really learn from in the U.S.
Well, thank you for helping us learn from you and the index card. I really appreciate you taking the time, Harold.